Welcome to Real Life Mentoring, where we explore real life issues to help you make an authentic difference in the world.
Hi, welcome back to part two of How to Better Understand People. Chris, you want to pick it up on the components we're talking about of how to really understand somebody better.
So we want to encourage you to consider, think about having meaningful conversations, mm-hmm. and what that will require is to ask questions, and as you understand people better, you will discover things like, oh, we have maybe some cultural differences, we have a generational difference, mm-hmm. and that's okay. You talk through these things and you learn from one another. So how to better understand people is so important as you discover their story.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the things we'll just jump into the points today is understanding the uncomfortable. What does that mean when we say understanding the uncomfortable?
First of all, I'm a high communicator, but I don't wake up in the morning hoping I get to have an uncomfortable conversation with someone.
Right.
It'd be something we talked about, pain that people have had in the mm-hmm. past, but painful or hurtful experiences.
Right.
It's really important to talk about it, but it's uncomfortable sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sexuality can be really complicated and uncomfortable for people. Here's an example. Were you raised in a home where your parents talked to you about sex?
Oh, heavens no.
Mine either.
Yeah.
And so when someone did talk to me about it initially, it was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It didn't need to be, but it was.
And that's a good point. What's uncomfortable for someone may not be uncomfortable. So I always let my mentee sort of gauge. I go from her comfortable level.
Okay.
Sometimes topics just need to be brought up, and we get to walk through that together. That may be a little bit more uncomfortable for her, but that's only after there's been a relational equity where we've
True.
Been friends for a while. There's a deep level of trust. And then I know we can go a little bit deeper on some topics.
In fact, I think it's healthy to say, you know what? When we meet again, I want to talk about these topics.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Maybe it may be a little uncomfortable for me and you. That's okay.
We'll walk through it together. Right.
And at some point, what was an uncomfortable conversation won't be later on because it's been had.
But if you don't go there, then you don't bring the relationship to a deeper level, and you don't arrive at a better understanding.
So some examples, as we mentioned, painful and hurtful experiences,
mm-hmm.
Talking about sexuality, difficult, abusive relationships maybe someone's been a part of or currently in,
mm-hmm.
unhealthy habits, addictions.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to talk about those things?
Right.
But the wonderful thing about it, you get to the point where you can talk about what's uncomfortable. You can talk about pretty much anything.
Right.
And please add to this list, as you're listening to this episode, and you're wondering, what would be uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Make a list.
Yeah, that's great. I think another key important thing is understanding body language. In part one, we talked about the importance of realizing that words and actions don't always tell the whole story. Body language helps you unpack that story.
Very much so.
So somebody says they're fine and their arms are crossed and there's a scowl on that face. Body language is telling you, yeah, probably things are not fine.
I wish I had my phone with me because I actually wrote down before this podcast recording is that to pick up a phone,
mm-hmm.
to be looking at it is actually an aspect of body language in our society now.
Right.
What am I telling you? You're talking to me about something important.
Right.
Okay. And I pick up my phone because I heard it ding.
Mm-hmm.
What am I telling you with that?
Yeah. What I have to say is not important.
Probably not.
Right.
Or if it is, I may think it is, but I'm distracted by, or it's a habit of mm-hmm. mine to just to grab the phone. I'm going to give you the wrong impression.
Right.
So body language is more than just our bodies.
Right.
It's what we do at the same time.
So what are we talking about? Well, like our posture. If we're leaning in, if we're interested, or looking away, not being able to make eye contact, arm placement, body movement, nervous habits, all of those things. You know, I have a tendency to notice when my girls were little, if one of them had a nervous tic, well, our youngest daughter, when she'd get tired,
yes,
she wouldn't have to say, "Mom, I'm tired." She would grab her hair
and rub it across
and rub it against
her cheek.
So that was a body movement that was very telling for her that,
yes,
"Mom, I've had enough. I'm tired and I need to be alone and I need to go to bed." She wasn't telling me with words, but her body was saying, "I'm tired. I'm done."
Yeah. It can actually be the whole body. Let's say you're at a party.
Right.
A lot of people are around and there's someone standing in the corner.
Uh-huh.
With a beverage, and they're just there in the corner.
Yeah.
Their body language may be saying, "I am really uncomfortable being here. I wish someone would come up to me and just talk to me individually because I don't want to be seen in all this crowd."
We at parties have had a lot of body language when you're content to talk the night away and I'm done.
Right.
There's some body language where I'm looking at you like, Mr. Elledge, I love you so much, but if I don't get out of this party, I'm going to crash.
Right.
Right. And there's some body language, like some looks being exchanged.
Right. And hopefully no one else would notice that.
Right. Right. Yeah. So body language is so important. Yeah.
Or like you open the front door and say, well, thank you guys for coming tonight. And they're still at the dinner table.
Yeah.
You know. But these are, again, how to better understand people. This is the purpose of this episode.
Right. A key component in this is understanding social skills and social anxiety. I think it's something worth bringing up. Mentors need to bring this up. Be candid about your own social anxiety or social skills.
Or lack thereof.
Right. Because that can really help you understand mentees. I have a mentee who was very vocal when we started getting to know one another. She said, hey, when we're in a large group, I've got social anxiety. So if you see me acting like A, B, or C, that's how it's presenting itself. Made all the difference in the world in our relationship, because then I understood, oh, she's feeling some pressure here because we're in a social setting. I can come help or whatever.
Would you have known this person had social anxiety initially?
Oh, heavens, no.
Very expressive, almost life of the party.
Right. So just being so vocal and bringing those topics up, a good mentor will bring those topics up. You may not be in a social setting with your mentee, but bringing these topics helps them be aware of what they do, helps you understand them, gives you more compassion. Yeah, those are key things. Anything else on that for you?
I was mentoring a guy, and it didn't seem to be working so well.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't seem to be, from my perspective, attentive, interested that much. And I thought, you know what? Maybe he doesn't need to be doing this. So I think I'm going to let him off the hook, meet with him the next time and say, look, if this is not a fit, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
What I discovered, though, I gave him some examples of what I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you don't really seem interested in this. And that's okay if you don't want to do this.
Uh-huh.
And he shared with me that he battled social anxiety.
Okay.
That gave me incredible compassion. I had compassion for him anyway, but it gave me understanding of him.
Mm.
So I said, give me some examples. What would I see and hear from you that would tell me that?
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense as I look back over our journey. So it
did. That experience bring the relationship deeper?
Very much so. Yeah. When you understand someone better, when we are understood better, it changes the relationship.
Mm.
You go, oh, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
That would be a struggle now. And so also what I did with that, I contacted our friend
mm-hmm.
who battles with social anxiety,
mm-hmm.
who is a professional,
mm-hmm.
not in social anxiety, but a professional counselor.
Uh-huh.
And I said, tell me what you deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And she began to give me a list, and it connected for me. It made sense.
Speaking of connecting, we have on here, understanding connecting points is one way to better understand somebody. I am always, especially in those beginning stages of a relationship, in a mentor-mentee relationship, I'm trying to find connecting points. So because my dad was in the Air Force, we moved around a lot of times until I was 18. I think we lived in 18 different places. It was a lot of places. So somebody may not have had that experience, but because of job loss or abuse or whatever, my mentee that I'm getting to know maybe moved around a lot. That's a connecting point.
The moving around.
Makes
sense. It gives
the
you
the sense of transition, right?
Yeah, it feels good to connect on certain levels with people.
Right. So finding those connecting points help bond you together. It gives me emotional attachment to her, like, oh, of course you know how I feel because this is how I felt. That must have been how you felt. Yeah.
I think initially people think about me, connection points, maybe we both like sports or we both like history or
and
music.
And those are.
Those are.
Right.
But it's also some painful experiences you've had.
Right.
In fact, it's amazing when you can connect with someone because they understand some of your hurtful past.
Right.
You want to see that relationship go deep mm-hmm. and meaningful. It's amazing what can happen. So connecting points can be numerous things. That's what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Right. We're going to talk about understanding fear. And I think what people often mistake as, oh, that person's probably dealing with fear. If somebody's always joking around or...
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you back up and say that again?
Right. So fear, when we understand the role of fear in a person's life, sometimes it presents itself in ways we wouldn't go, oh, that person's dealing with fear. So example, they're always maybe joking or there's surface conversations. It could be that person is really struggling with some fear.
Yeah, it just doesn't manifest. It manifests itself in some other ways that would disguise it.
Right.
That's what you're saying. Okay,
right.
Makes sense.
It could come across as maybe the person's arrogant, or they speak as though they have all the answers. They have this I can do it all attitude. Oh, I've done that. It didn't work well for me. I'm the expert, whatever.
Okay.
All of those, not always. We're not putting a blanket statement out there. But if you really want to better understand somebody, it could be they're presenting that way because they could be fearful of some things.
I do have a humorous example. Yeah. Many years ago in my 20s, I was working for this hotel and the manager, a new manager came in and he was always Mr. Positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this so many times. Years later, I still think of this when I think uh-huh. about this man. If someone asked him, how are you today? Super.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was so dramatic.
Uh-huh.
Super.
Yeah.
Everything was super. I remember thinking, no, it's not. You know, we've got problems when
yeah.
we have this situation. And so it makes me wonder, not a judgment, but it makes me wonder what's going on inside of a person if everything's always super, because it's just not.
Right. It maybe it's not fear, and it goes back to words and actions don't always tell the whole story.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what we've seen 30 plus years working with people, sometimes fear will manifest in those ways. So just taking the time to dig deeper with that person.
I have been humbled and discovered that I used to brag about loving change.
Uh-huh.
And some people really struggle with change.
Yeah.
It brings about fear. I was humbled. I know God told me this one day. He said, Chris, you like change that you initiate.
Mm.
I've discovered that I can deal with fear when change is just thrown upon me.
Thrown on you, yeah.
And I may try to, I'm not trying to wear a mask, but I may present it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just fear stirring inside of me.
I think one of the ways we can better understand people is if they have had a lack of healthy relationships. What does that mean to you when we talk about that?
We could talk about this aspect of it for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
We are all raised so differently.
Mm-hmm.
And what is normal for us is not normal for someone else.
Right.
So I was raised in a home of an alcoholic father, poverty, abuse, a lot of things going on. That became the norm for me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was normal.
You thought that was healthy.
I thought, no, I didn't. I knew we weren't
you
healthy.
You knew it wasn't healthy.
But I thought it was normal.
Okay.
I left home, went off to college, and as I matured and developed, I realized, wow, I knew we weren't healthy, but very little of my growing up was actually normal.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say understanding the lack of healthy relationships,
mm-hmm.
I began to realize I didn't have a healthy relationship with my father,
mm-hmm.
didn't have one to speak of. I didn't really have it with my mother in some ways. It impacted my relationship with my siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I needed a good example. What is a healthy relationship?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know what that even looked like.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we're not aware of that. It takes time and conversations. Hey, what was it like growing up in your family? And when, as a mentor, you hear these stories that are not healthy, then that's the time and place to talk about, did you at the time realize that wasn't healthy? Or how do you envision a healthy family now? It's worthy of having those conversations because, like you said, the homes we grow up in, that's normal. But just because that's our normal doesn't mean they're the healthiest relationships. Right.
We have three examples here. Again, there were others you could add. Understanding a lack of healthy relationships, having conversations versus being spoken at.
Mm-hmm.
That impacts relationships.
Sure.
Expressing feelings openly and honestly versus silence or passive-aggressive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have never experienced being able to honestly express their feelings openly. It was shut down maybe.
Sure.
And so that would be normal for them. It's
mm-hmm.
not healthy, though.
Mm-hmm.
Trust versus protecting oneself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So all those are great signs of lack of healthy relationships. And the last one we're going to talk about today is understanding lies. The lies we believe about ourselves determine our behavior, right? And so when we are mentoring somebody, they may be believing lies that they don't understand are lies. What does that mean, Chris?
Well, I don't know. It's interesting how the brain works, the mind works. I don't purposely want to believe lies.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably believe some things that are lies. Because
mm-hmm.
if you tell me it's a lie, I don't want to believe it.
Right.
An example from my own family, don't expect too much, Chris, because those things are for other people,
mm-hmm.
not us as the Elledges. My last name is Elledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a lie, I believe. Don't mm-hmm. expect too much. This is good enough for us.
Mm. Yeah.
So what I would do without realizing it, I would settle on, that's good enough for Chris Elledge.
Yeah.
That's okay for Chris. Well, if this negative thing happened, it's okay because this positive thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was believing lies, did not even know they were lies. Mm-hmm. This is good enough for us.
As a mentor, it takes a lot of trust to, as you spend time with your mentee, and maybe the lies present themselves like they're not going to go for a certain job or engage in a certain relationship because they don't feel like they're good enough or they didn't bring enough value to the table. Those are things a mentor can highlight in a loving and kind way to help the mentee go, wait, what? I am able to go for that promotion or to be involved in this friendship? Wait, what? I think that's such an invaluable tool that a mentor can give to a mentee, is helping them discover the lies for themselves. That aha moment of, wow, I have value and worth. Man, what a great role to play in somebody's life.
I, from my own experience, for me to just decide one day, okay, I'm no longer will I believe these lies.
Right.
That sounds good, but it sometimes you have to walk out of it. Mm-hmm. It takes a while, because when you believe something long enough, and especially you didn't know it was a lie, it can be inside of you so deeply, and that mentor could say, you know what, remember we talked about that? That's a lie that you were handed early on. We're not going to believe that.
Yeah.
I know that, but it feels like it's true.
Right.
I know, but we're not going to believe it.
Right.
And we're going to do some things to help you get out of that.
Yeah.
That mindset.
Well, part two, we've talked about some other things on how to better understand people. We talked about understanding the uncomfortable, understanding body language, social skills, and social anxiety, looking for connecting points, looking for how fear maybe will present itself, realize that there's some people who may have had a lack of healthy relationships, and then understanding lies. Really, when you begin to become a student of other people, especially in mentee relationship, boy, you can really go to a deeper level when you begin to understand those things. Anything else as we close?
Don't make the assumption that you understand someone.
Yeah.
I've done that before. Mm-hmm. Well, from what I see, hear, and see your responses, I think I understand you.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Sit down over a conversation again and again and again, and you will better get to understand that person. So don't make assumptions.
Right.
That you understand someone.
Well, we hope in part one and part two, we've given you some tools how to better understand others, whether you're a mentor, maybe you're a mentee, maybe you're just in a relationship with other people. Boy, we all need some tools on how to better understand people. So if this has been helpful, like and subscribe. Consider donating to our podcast. You can do that at FahrenheitMentoring.org. So as always, we want to thank you for listening.